This is episode number 7 with Jade Taylor. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Rise Higher podcast. Get ready for an awesome episode today with my amazing friend, Jade Taylor. Now, Jade is an actress, singer, writer, producer, social entrepreneur, and advocate for women and self-empowerment. Her most recent and notable work on the big and small screens include Aquarius, playing opposite David Duchovny, Murder in the First with Taye Diggs and Kathleen Robertson, Higher Power, produced by Lorenzo D. Bonaventura and starring Austin Stowell and Ron Eldard. And she most recently is one of the lead actors on the hit sci-fi series, The Magicians. Now, Jade is also the founder and CEO of Iris Entertainment, a production company with a mission to advocate and create films and television where women are depicted in a positive, powerful, and inspirational manner. She's also the co-founder of the Tribe Movement, as well as the I Rise Movement, which supports women and domestic violence victims. She is also a founder of New Movement, which supports homeless communities in the Los Angeles area. On today's show, Jade opens up about her sexual trauma starting when she was 11 and the pathway she took to heal, rise up, and empower not only herself, but other women who have been victims of sexual assault. Now, this episode is packed with so many empowering perspectives and tools just for you. Now, some of the things we talk about are how Jade healed from her sexual trauma, the specific steps Jade took to release the shame over her body and overcome her eating disorder, a powerful perspective to remove pain from trauma and to empower yourself. Jade shares the resources to start seeking help to heal, even if you don't have the money. Jade shares 3 of her self-love practices and 3 ways to reprogram old patterns to positive new ones. And she shares her go-to practice to get out when she's in a dark place, plus so much more. I hope you enjoy this episode with Jade. And for everything that we mention in today's episode and for the links to connect with Jade, you can check it out in the show notes. And that is over at stephaniekwong.com/EP7. All right, here we go. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. Today, I have a very special guest, my very dear friend and the amazing Jade Taylor, who is an actress, she's a writer, she's an activist, she's a social entrepreneur, and just an all-around beautiful soul.
Thank you.
Love you so much.
Love you.
Yeah, and I just want to jump right in. Yeah. Jade was here. You were here to shoot a PSA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And thank God we were able to catch you because we've been trying to coordinate and it's like, Jade, how are we going to get you on? We're going to do Skype. We're going to do whatever we needed to do to get you on this show. But thankfully, through divine intervention, you shot a PSA yesterday for the Me Too campaign.
Yes.
Which is so powerful.
Yes, very powerful.
You've been such an advocate for raising awareness around, you know, protecting women and men too from sexual assault.
Absolutely.
And you have such a powerful story to share. So I would love, I know you shared a lot yesterday. Yeah. You started sharing with me when we were offline. I was like, wait, hold on. Save that for the camera.
Yeah.
But now I would love for you to kind of open up about your experiences.
Sure.
Because I know so many people can benefit from hearing it, but also what you did to rise higher and overcome and have the strength that you have now.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
So what I had shared was about an experience I had when I was 11, which was the first time I was sexually assaulted. And I wanted to speak on on behalf of like the younger generations, because I think right now there's this wave of talking about the entertainment industry and all of that, but it is not just specifically in the entertainment industry. I've dealt with that as well, but it happens to all women. It happens to all girls everywhere, and men and boys. So essentially what happened to me, and why it's important for me to speak out is to have a voice for the younger generations that don't know how to speak out yet. Mm-hmm. They're too young to, they don't quite understand what's going on mm-hmm. with them. And so when I was 11, I developed at a really, really young age. I was, I think, a C cup at 11. I was a double D at 13. And so at 11, I knew I was different than all the other girls, mm-hmm. but I couldn't quite wrap my head around what that meant. And, I would wear sweatshirts all the time because I was ashamed of how my body was changing, or I'm not ashamed, but I was unconscious of how it was changing. Yeah. And I didn't really know how to deal with it. So I just covered it up. I felt so different from everyone else. And one day I was at school, it was summer and it was so hot and I was wearing these sweatshirts all the time. And I decided to take it off because I was sweating, and I was walking over to lunch and I had about 10 older boys, probably a year or two older than me, surround me where I couldn't break free. And they just started grabbing me, grabbing every part of my flesh. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. So I just froze out of fear. And I don't remember how it stopped, just that it did. And I remember crying in the girls' room for the rest of the school day.
That's so traumatizing.
Yeah, yeah. It was. And I mean, looking back, I didn't realize how traumatizing it was until years later. I didn't share that story with anybody until years later either. And that was just the first occurrence. I then, because of that experience, I then continued to wear sweatshirts out of shame, out of fear. And anytime I decided to take it off on a hot day, I'd get water poured on me so people could see through my shirt. I had my shirt ripped off and my chest exposed to all of my peers.
Wow.
When I was 12, 13. I mean, it just continued to happen. And so there was a lot of shame, a lot of body shaming, self-shaming. I don't think I was conscious of the fact that it was all of this trauma that I incurred, that I experienced, that then made me have that sort of the psychological belief, the unconscious belief that there was something wrong with me.
And you're talking about trauma from even before those boys did that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much. And so, you know, I spent years, and we had briefly spoken about having an eating disorder, and that was a big catalyst as well. It was sort of a way to both control how I felt, but also because I just felt so much shame in regards to my body because of those experiences. And it was, you know, a 10-year journey of an eating disorder for me. It started when I was 12. So, it was just, there was a lot of trauma. And I ended up, and this is what I shared earlier, that I ended up getting a breast reduction when I was 17, because for so many years, I believed that there was something wrong with me.
Had you been continually harassed since then too, or you just kept holding that belief that something's wrong with me, and then at that point you're just like, I have to do something, and then you resorted to the breast reduction?
It's interesting. So it started when, like I said, when I was 11, and it continued on till I was about 15, and then something shifted in me, and I'm not quite sure what that was. I think just there was a different strength in me, a different mm-hmm. understanding, a different awareness. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe being older, I don't know what the case was, but it sort of dissipated a bit, the abuse and the, you know, harassment. And also I gained a strength and a confidence to speak out and to not allow that kind of behavior. Yeah. But the psychological imprint stuck with me. And so there was this internal conflict for years with myself, and it took me years to overcome that and years to heal that.
Yeah. When you, so coming back to when you said something shifted inside of you, mm-hmm. and you started to build an inner strength,
yeah.
and something changed. And I know we have a lot of the yeah. same beliefs, but yeah. energetically, right? If you hold a certain strength about you, even if you don't say it, people kind of know to not mess with you.
Absolutely.
But
absolutely.
If you also, maybe if your confidence is low or your esteem is yeah. low, or you have these unconscious beliefs of I'm not good enough, or I,
you then
you know,
create that.
Yourself. Yeah. Then it's almost like you invite that abuse yeah. into your life, which...
And not to say that, like, you're not responsible
no,
for abuse.
Not
like,
at all.
Yeah, to just clarify that. But I think there's something to be said about, like, the reptilian brain.
Yes.
Because, like, I don't know if many people don't know what that is exactly, but essentially it's like when there is a weakness, there are certain kinds of people that then feed off of that weakness. But when they show strength, they then sort of back away. Mm-hmm. I think that was sort of what was happening for
yeah.
me. It was I was starting to show a strength and a confidence that I didn't have before. And
people so. Kind of energetically sense that, whoa, something's different. I can't
yeah.
just, you know, take advantage of you.
Exactly, yeah.
If you could recall back, what
was
had
a catalyst?
You... Yeah, like what was the catalyst to build that for you?
So many things.
Okay.
So many things. Gosh, where do I begin? I got kicked out of school.
okay.
Well, it's a long, drawn-out story, but essentially... my mom was going to New York a lot for work, and my brother and I were by ourselves for the most part. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't that I was a bad kid. I did get sort of caught up with the wrong crowd for a while because I was rebelling against those inner conflicts, and I didn't know how to deal with them. So I was reaching for things outside of myself to heal that, mm-hmm. Or to fill that void. And, so whether that was like turning to like drinking at 12 or, wow. you know, drugs at 12,
mm-hmm. I mean, to numb really, out from the pain.
Numb out, exactly. Yep. And because I was trying to avoid being with these kids that were tormenting me, I stopped going to school cause I didn't have anybody to tell me to go. And so because I stopped going, I got kicked out and sent to a continuation school. And I was put in this place where it was as if people had no desire for life. It was the school was from 9:30 to 12:30 with a half an hour recess. So a 2.5 hour school. And I felt like this wasn't me. I was like, this isn't my life. This isn't who I am, who I want to be.
Yeah.
So I would go home and I would do research and I would, I'm lucky to have had a mother who was in like the healing field. She's a holistic nutritionist, iridologist, healer. So I was introduced to that at a very young age. Mm-hmm. I also started Landmark at 13. So there's a lot of inner yep. work that I was doing within this that was helping to build those muscles mm-hmm. and heal my past. So there was just this huge, huge shift in me during that time going, what is my life about? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to let this trauma define me. I'm going to let it fuel me.
Beautiful.
Rather than define me.
So that was the shift in your mindset, mm-hmm. right? Is
yeah.
taking what happened and using it to empower yourself
yeah.
versus staying the victim. Because
exactly.
I know that's where a lot of people stay is like, this happened to me, this is my story, and that's how it's always going to be, or
yeah.
it defines who I am or what I'm capable of.
Yeah.
But that's not true.
Absolutely.
It's truly
true.
Like, you know, something happened, great or not great, but something happened and now what do I want to do about it?
Exactly. Exactly. You can like just sit with the upset and like being a victim and all of that. Or you can go, okay, this happened. What can I learn from it? How can I take it and use it?
To fuel me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that is absolutely, so I would go home and I would sing for 5 hours. I would study plays. I would do all the things that I knew fulfilled me.
Mm-hmm.
And then drove me. And it was then that I started really wanting to be an advocate for girls and for women. And so I started doing research on how I could do that. And so it really was the catalyst for me to change and
mm-hmm.
to support others.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the power lies too, is when, you know, you use your pain to support something greater, which is, you know, to help other people who are
yeah.
going through it. And you've been such a catalyst. for giving people, because it is men and women of all ages who experience that, you know, abuse.
Yeah.
Right now, it feels like in the time that we're dealing with what's coming out in the entertainment industry and the abuse that's happening there, it feels like it's fueled more towards men, but it is boys and girls or men and women.
Yeah.
But that you're using it to give people permission to speak up.
Absolutely.
And that is so powerful.
It's so powerful. And not only just speak up, but for them to feel like they're not alone. Mm-hmm. And also because as if I look back at myself as that 11-year-old child, I look at my surroundings and the people that influenced me, realizing that I was surrounded by these powerful men that could do whatever they wanted. And so that was what I believed. It was like, oh, they're allowed to do that. Even though internally I knew innately that there was something wrong with that. Mm-hmm. There was still this perpetual belief that they could do whatever they wanted because they were a man or because they were more powerful than I was. Mm-hmm. And so I think in us speaking out, it not only allows for others to speak out and use their voices and have the courage to do so and not feel alone, but it also allows the young ones to see, oh, that's not acceptable. Mm-hmm. I should be respected. I should be treated equally. I should be treated fairly. This is not acceptable behavior. You know, so I think it really shifts that paradigm, that archaic, you know, belief system that's been...
Like keep all your secrets hidden behind closed doors. Now it's like, no, speak out. And you're so right, because we talked about this too when the camera wasn't rolling, but about how important it is to start at a young age because, you know, from birth till about 7, 8-ish years old, you're in a hypnotic state. You're just saying yes and you're believing everything that you're seeing. Whatever you model of other people, so whether it's your parents or your peers or your teachers, you're thinking that this is how you behave in society, right? Yeah. Or you also learn survival mechanisms based off of how you're being treated.
Yeah.
However, I know what you mentioned about kids, like where does this abuse start? Or like, how do we actually stop this abuse?
Yeah.
And go ahead, I'd love for you to share what you
absolutely.
Said.
Absolutely. I'm a certified domestic violence counselor. I, you know, it's something that I'm very passionate about. I do that just to volunteer. And in doing the training to become that, there's a lot of studies about psychology and pathology and what's statistically 80% of children that are abused then become abusers themselves.
Wow.
So
it's a high statistic.
Horribly high statistic. And so it really starts with us. It starts with us to shift it for the future generations, whether that's them being influenced by parents, whether that's being influenced by the media, whatever they see, they're going to believe and they're going to then think that's acceptable. Mm-hmm. So it's really up to us to shift that paradigm. Mm-hmm. But it does start with the parents. It starts with parenting. It starts with us teaching our children what is and isn't acceptable and how to respect one another.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's why I know through the work that I do, it's so much two things. One is unlearning what you learned as a child because there's so much programming that was either put onto you or that you made up, right? A story about yourself that's negative based off of your experience from your parents. And so a lot of the work that I do again is unwinding that, or it's having people learn to model behaviors that is going to influence their kids in the right way, right?
Yeah.
And so I know that some of the moms I've worked with and fathers, the one thing which is powerful where if they're stuck within themselves, it's like, well, what do you want to show your kids?
Yeah.
Because your kids are watching you.
Yeah.
Everything you're doing, how you respond to
even the
conflict,
things you're not saying.
The things that you're not saying, do you shut down? Do you put up walls? Are you open? All that, they're watching you and going, oh, this is how I'm supposed to be when there's conflict, shut down.
Yeah.
Or I'm supposed to get pissed off. Yeah. So now
I'm smiling because I literally had this conversation with my buddy last night. Who has two kids now divorced, and saying like, oh, I don't want to mess them up, and like his son is shutting down because of the divorce and because of this process. And I went, well, how are you dealing with it? Yes. How are you processing?
Yes.
Because I'm seeing you shut down. So of course they're modeling after your own behavior. 100%. So if you don't want that, if you want them to be open and you want them to be vulnerable, you get to do that yourself.
Absolutely. 100%. Mm-hmm. It's reparenting ourselves, learning new and being willing to be responsible to say what's not working in my life. Mm-hmm. What do I need to do to shift?
Yeah.
So that one, I can feel more empowered and more free and more loved.
Yeah.
And feel like I'm enough and worthy, because it's always the core of what people are struggling with.
Yeah.
And then model that for my kids.
Absolutely.
So that we can stop the cycles of abuse or negative patterning that's like continually going down through the generations.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was interesting because I was talking to him about his own father. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, what was your experience with your own father? And he was like, well, I didn't, like, nothing was good enough, all of these things. And I was like, well, how would you feel if that's how your son felt? So we really have to look at how we've been parented and see if we're unconsciously recreating that same pattern.
Yeah. And most of the times it is.
Yeah.
And it cracks me up sometimes when I hear friends or people going, I never want to be like my parent. And then all of a sudden you see them doing exactly what I'm doing.
And also the, like, what you resist persists, right? And so I stopped resisting not wanting to be my parents. And I'm like, okay, there's certain things. I was like, I accept that in this way, I am my father. Ugh. No, I accept it. And in this, way, I'm my mother.
And in this moment, how can I shift?
Yeah,
exactly. Oh, so good.
It's too funny. Yeah.
I'm so happy and grateful that you were able to find the strength and look outside of yourself to build and get the support you needed to build yourself up. And that's the encouragement for so many people to do that. You're not alone. Yeah. I love that message that you had. That's the whole point of this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is like, guys, we're talking, having people who are in the spotlight or super aspiring and accomplished like you to share your stories, to show we're all human. We all deal with challenging stuff.
Yeah.
But instead of feeling isolated and alone in that and thinking that something's wrong with you or that you're broken, that we all experience it. And as we all start to share these stories, we realize we're not alone and that there's a pathway up and out. And that's, you know, the parts now that I'd love for you to share even more of.
Yeah.
You know, I know you also talked about having your eating disorder for 10 years, 12 years?
10 years.
10 years.
Yeah. Long time.
What dropped you in? So maybe helping people to psychologically understand what that was. So if someone hasn't done that, but someone in their family has an eating disorder, what?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to talk on that. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things, because it's different for everyone. And that's the one thing that I really want to emphasize, because there are times where it's really about how one looks. And then there's times where it's about trying to numb the feelings. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was a combination, but for the most part, it was a means in which I could control my feelings.
Control.
Mm-hmm. It was all about control. It was like when I would have this like anxiety or trauma that would come up or whatever it may be, I felt like my outside circumstances were dictating how I was feeling, and I wanted to then be in control of them. So I would binge and purge. And if you don't know what that is, that's, you know, eating and then throwing up. And so many call it bulimia. So that was how I dealt with controlling my emotions rather than actually sitting with the emotions, because, you know, they say that, you know, pain is there to teach you something. And those emotions are there to teach you something. I was avoiding it because I couldn't handle the intensity of the emotion because there was so much trauma that I incurred. And this isn't just from, you know, the sexual assault and all that. I had a lot of other issues that we won't get into now. But it was for years how I dealt with things, by not dealing with things. Mm-hmm. Again, everybody is different, because some people really do it because they, like, lack of self-love. And of course that is a part of it, because if you love yourself enough, you aren't going to
treat yourself that way. You respectfully love your body.
Exactly.
And treat yourself well.
Exactly. And so that's absolutely a huge factor in it as well. But I think for me, you know, it wasn't like a continual 10 years. It was on and off for 10 years. And it wasn't just bulimia. It was at one point, in order to get back into school, they put me on medication for ADD or ADHD called Dexedrine, which is speed, essentially. So I ended up getting hooked on that at 14 and nearly OD'd on it, passed out, had this like huge experience with that. And that was really challenging for me to get off of that medication, not because of this. It's addictive. It is addictive. I don't think anybody, this is my personal opinion, I don't think anyone should be put on drugs for ADD or ADHD 99.9% of the time. It just means you're creative.
You're just creative.
You learn differently than other people. It just means you're creative, you're artistic, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. You might have more energy than other people. Does not mean there's something wrong with you.
Not at all.
It means you're special, actually. But so that was something that I dealt with, and it also takes away appetite. It causes you to stay up at all hours. So I would go a couple days at a time without sleeping.
Which is horrible for you.
Especially at like 13, 14, 15 when
and
you're
growing,
developing
and
mind.
Your brain, yeah, it's developing.
Yeah, so it actually took me years to reprogram and to build my muscles up again after like abusing that for years. So at one point it was that. At one point it was anorexia because of that, and then the bulimia as well. But so all of these were means of control. At the end of the day, it was means of control and not being able to deal with the emotions that I was experiencing. And I think that's because I didn't have a support system to talk about it. And so I so appreciate what you're doing, because I think many people feel like they're alone, don't feel like they have a support, don't feel like they have an outlet. At one point, I ended up joining a support group for bulimia and anorexia, which actually, for me personally, and this isn't for everyone, because everybody has their own experience, it was a detriment to me, because it just kept me in that cycle of believing there was something wrong with me. It kept me in the cycle of talking about the problem
instead
rather than
of actually finding the solution. Yeah.
So for me, therapy and inner work was so vital. I did Landmark again when I was 18. So again, I started when I was 12 and then until about 22. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did a lot of like self-development work. I did a lot of therapy. I did all of these things to be introspective and to reflect and to see why I was feeling the need to do it. And it is actually it's like a psychological trigger. So if you know anything about sort of how the brain processes when trauma occurs, what happens is the logical front cortex thinking part of your brain shuts down, and the back part, the cortisol, goes into hyperdrive, overdrive, and you go into survival mode, which is freeze, flight, or fight. And so you then sort of go to the things that help you to deal with survival. Mm-hmm. And for me, those emotions, when they would come up, I would immediately go into survival. There was no logical thinking. And that programming happens. It becomes habitual. It becomes muscle memory. And so your instinctual, your instinctual response is, oh, when I feel this way, I need to go for that. That's going to make it feel better. Mm-hmm. There was also other things that I did at like 14, 15, where I would actually, I cut myself. I don't know if you've heard of cutting, but this is another means of numbing pain. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, it's actually releases something that is like heroin in your body that really numbs the pain. Same thing with bulimia, same thing with all those things. It is a form of numbing, mm-hmm. but there's no growth in that, because the growth is, you know,
and there's
where the pain
lies. There's so much pain.
Yeah.
So many people, because of the pain they've experienced growing up as kids, that becomes their comfort zone.
Completely.
So even though it's so uncomfortable, feeling good actually is outside of someone's comfort zone.
Yeah.
So it's weird to want to take the steps to heal and to get better and to release these old feelings, because it's scary.
Yeah.
Like, who would I be without this pain and these traumas?
Oh, absolutely.
However, we see how detrimental it is if you do not deal with the pain.
Absolutely.
It keeps resurfacing. It rears its ugly head.
Yeah.
And then you do things to try to numb and avoid, which is not healthy.
Yeah.
And again, how are you contributing to yourself? Not. How are you contributing to society? Not. And if you have children, what are you showing them?
Absolutely.
And although it's the scariest thing to face your emotions, it is the most courageous and powerful thing you could do.
Yeah.
And it's the most healing thing you could do to finally say, all right, put on my warrior suit.
Yeah.
Let me deal with these emotions. So once and for all, they can come up and out and I can free myself of them. Because, you know, that's the biggest piece of trauma. It's like these energetic compartments get locked into you.
Mm-hmm.
and you don't want the compartment to open because what would happen? So you numb, so you don't feel it.
But nobody, and at the end of the day, nobody wants to feel that pain. But the only way to deal with it is through it.
Through it.
Yeah. And so I, you know, unfortunately had to have like hit rock bottom a couple times in order to get out of that and see what I was doing to myself. And I don't wish that for anybody. So I'm hoping that, you know, in talking about it, people see that there are ways out before getting to rock bottom.
So what would you suggest for people who have experienced trauma? What are some avenues of where they can go to at least start seeking help that you've found to be effective?
Yeah. Well, okay. So there's so many things, because I know that a lot of people are like, well, I don't have the money to go to therapy, things like that. My brother, who's an incredible human, actually, there's different therapy centers that charge you based on your income. So 10 years ago, when I didn't have an income and I had three jobs at a time, I found this place, I think it's called the Maple Center, if you're in Los Angeles. Yeah, they take you based on your income. So I was paying $25 a session. Therapy usually costs, you know, up to $200 a session. So, and it was so important for me to do that on a weekly basis, for me to realize what was going on and to reprogram that muscle memory and that trauma that I was experiencing. So, and you know, they say the first step is awareness. So if you're aware of what you're doing, then seek help. And I know that is a hard thing to hear, because anytime somebody said that to me, I was like, I don't need help. I'm fine. Handle it on my own. But there's a difference between like, nobody needs help, right? Like we're not weak beings. We don't need help, but we're not alone. That's, I think, the difference that I want to really emphasize. We're not alone. There's people that love you and want to support you. And don't be afraid to get out of your comfort zone. And there's so many places
you can turn to.
And if you don't have the means of doing that, there's so many books, so many resources, so many things online, YouTube videos such as this one that are here to support and people that really do care. Yeah, and again, just emphasizing that you're not alone in this scenario.
I think one of the biggest first steps is just finding someone you can talk to.
Absolutely.
First, whether it's a family member, a friend, or even if it's walking into a center somewhere and saying, can I just talk to somebody?
Yeah.
Because the first step of asking for support is so powerful, but then just releasing the energy of speaking it, it already starts to dissolve the shame or the guilt or whatever's holding it in place.
Yeah.
And then maybe asking that person like, you know, would you be willing to help me to see what other resources are out there?
Yeah.
Because there is a lot, like you said, and it's a matter of finding what works for you, but definitely relying on others to support you through it.
And there's so many, I mean, the internet is a magical place. There's so many resources. You can Google like support groups and thousands of things will show up. But also for me, besides reaching out to someone else, because I think that was also part of my habit was trying to reach for something or someone outside of myself in order to fill that void. So for me, it was about writing and speaking to myself, speaking to that inner child and healing that. And so rather than seek someone else to heal that,
totally.
Whether that was through a relationship, which I did for many years or whatever it may be, I wanted to care for me. And that was so vital in my healing, specifically for the eating disorder, was doing work on self-love.
Yeah.
Huge.
I'm a massive advocate of self-love.
Oh, I know you are. I've done your course many times, actually. So for me, it was like loving myself more than the addiction that I had.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it was learning to care about myself. And so rather than reaching for the, you know, box of cookies that I was going to eat and then purge, it was reaching for something healthy. And it was so reprogramming that response system. That is like huge, huge key. A lot of people use like rubber bands as response, but that I think was hard for me.
That's because still inflicting pain.
Exactly. So not only is it still inflicting pain, but it was hard for me to get out of that, like that cortisol freeze, flight or fight, to logically think, oh, I need to snap this in this moment.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, if I'm in my kitchen and I see the cookies over here, and right next to it or in front of it, I keep the healthy option. I keep the, you know, the apple or whatever it may be, or a note that was a reminder of self-love saying, I love you more than this. So like creating those moments, that for me was really, really supportive. And it just, again, it was just reprogramming. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that I was intending to self-harm at that point. After so many years, it was just this habit of doing it and this addiction to numbing that pain. So it's just really these like little micro steps of reprogramming it, and not to get discouraged if you falter in any way, because we're human and that's part of the process. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot. It takes so much to reprogram this incredible brain of ours.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's been wired in one way for so long that one book, one workshop, one YouTube video is not going to be the thing that is like, I'm completely different. It's a whole process. And I believe that
It's practice.
It's a journey through this entire lifetime. I always say to this, because I have clients who like, within 2 months or 180 and they're like, I'm amazing. It's all done. I'm healed.
And then months later.
And then all of a sudden, you know, they're like, I'm finished. I won't do this anymore. Or I've done my work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you know, months later, something shifts.
The next layer of the onion.
Yeah. There's the next layer. But I always say this, and I always forewarn people, look, it's just like anything, you know, when you are, so you're trying to lose weight, all of a sudden, boom, it sheds. But then the next parts, it's you got to keep doing it to either lose a little bit more or maintain it, and you don't stop.
Yeah.
And I always say, I was like, do you think the Dalai Lama stops meditating? No.
Yeah.
Homie needs to keep meditating because it's a practice.
Absolutely,
and all this reprogramming is a practice. And even, you know, you might feel like you've kind of overcome something, and then something 10 years down the road might re-trigger it.
Yeah.
And instead of beating yourself up of going, oh, I thought I dealt with this, look at it with love.
Yeah.
And go, okay, more depths for me to go to heal it.
Yeah.
But self-love is a key. And I know
it absolutely is.
Earlier when I mentioned, you know, seek out outside support, that's more to also be the support of the catalyst to look inward.
Yeah.
Because truly, like you were saying, that's where all of it lies, is for you to go in and do work in here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely. Absolutely.
What do you think then? So what was the decision that you made when you're like, all right, 10 years of this control eating disorder done.
Yeah.
What was the shift for you?
I think it was just self-awareness. Like I was so aware, and I had been practicing self-love. So at that point, well, I mean, it was a couple of things. One, when I said, you know, hit rock bottom, I gave myself a really, I created a, I don't want to call it ulcers because it wasn't ulcers. It was what happens when one is bulimic. Your body, like, it confuses your body. So it starts to overproduce bile, and bile breaks down food. And so it actually ate the
lining,
the lining of my stomach. Mm-hmm. So I was in horrific, horrific pain for about 2 years every time I ate.
Wow.
No matter what, I tried eating soups. I tried eating like the most gentle foods, no matter what it was.
It aggravated it.
It aggravated it. Mm. And so that was a huge thing. I was like, oh, I'm actually seeing the physical repercussions of what I've been doing for so many years. And as a singer, it was...
She's an amazing singer, by the way.
You.
Amazing.
Thank you, darling.
You slay, girl.
Thank you. The share moment. But yeah, as a singer, I was like, I'm harming that. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, it was interesting, but I cared so much about my creativity and performing more than I did myself in many ways. But it was the catalyst for me to start to love myself more. Because I was like, I can't do this to my voice. I can't do this to my, this is my instrument. But then also like being in so much pain, I don't wish it upon anyone. It was literally crying in like fetal position on the floor 3 times a day for 2 years. That was a huge moment where I was like, I can't keep doing this. I cannot keep doing this to myself. But also I was doing all this work on self-love that I realized now it's not about loving myself. Now it's just a habit. Mm-hmm. So now it's about really reprogramming the brain and reprogramming that response system.
So can you give maybe 3 examples of practices of self-love that you did in addition to the one that you shared with like the notes and, and replacing the food. So three examples of how people can start practicing being loving with themselves. And then three ways to start reprogramming old patterns to new ones.
Well, say for me, the things that really, really shifted how I spoke to myself was mirror work and journaling. Those two were everything. So if you don't know what mirror work is, it's essentially like looking in the mirror and speaking to yourself lovingly. And I know that sounds like a simple thing, but when you don't,
it's hard.
It's so challenging.
It is hard.
Oh man, it's hard for anybody, but when you're continually speaking to yourself negatively, unconsciously, because most of it is unconscious, it's really hard to reprogram that. But sitting and just finding the things that you love about yourself, telling yourself, I love you.
Even if you don't mean it yet.
Yes.
Like that's the thing.
It's so important.
Like,
oh man.
Because sometimes, like, I remember when I first started, I just sat there and I looked at myself and I just cried and I couldn't stop. And even though I didn't necessarily feel it, I would say, you know, I love you, I love you. Because, again, if you say something enough times, you start to believe it.
Fake it till you make it.
Fake it till you make it, girl. Or at least, love you. Or at least, like, sometimes you can shift the language where your brain can listen to it and you can say, I'm willing to be open to loving myself, or I'm open to the possibility of that. If saying I love you directly is too confronting, say what your brain is more willing to accept.
And even just looking at yourself in the mirror and just not judging. That in of itself was the start for me. Just staring at myself, not judging, was so challenging. But it really starts to, it not only makes you aware of how you unconsciously speak to yourself and how you unconsciously view yourself, which is, again, the first step is awareness. So if you're aware of that, you realize, oh, I don't like speaking to myself like that. Like, would you speak to your child that way? No. Would you look at your child that way with discontent and disappointment? No. You would look at them lovingly. So it's like starting to look at yourself with the loving eyes of what how you would look at a child, or how a parent, how you would want a parent to look at you. So that writing daily, all the things, the gratitudes, the things that I loved about myself, or the things I loved about what I did. So really noticing those moments rather than the negatives, because I think we can get into this perpetual cycle of looking at the negative things that we do. And yeah, that just, for me, that was
huge.
So those two were really big. If I can think of a third, like you said, talking to someone. For me, therapy and doing the inner work. Like not everybody has the means to do, you know, these self-development courses. But when there's a will, there's a way. I didn't have the money to do it, and I found a way because I was so determined to change my life and be the person I knew I was, not the person I was programmed to be. Because it's so much of it is programming. It's traumatic programming.
That's all it is, And what I love what you said is the willingness to be responsible and saying, if I want the change, I got to do it. I'm not going to wait for someone to hand it to me or do it for me. I got to step in and be the one to take control.
Yeah. 1,000% 1,000% So it's really taking charge of your life. And that was the thing. It was like, I felt like I was losing myself and I was losing my life because I was letting this trauma control it rather than, and just knowing that you're in control, being responsible for it, knowing that you are in control of your emotions, your feelings, the experience.
How you interpreted the experience.
The addiction, which I, and this might be a controversial statement, but I'm going to say it because I don't believe that addiction is permanent at all. I think we can heal anything that we want. And I think I don't like that in certain group settings. They talk about this, like addiction being a disease and being something that you're plagued with and there's something wrong with you. I think that just perpetuates that belief. And so really, I just really wanted to emphasize that everything, like I haven't thought about the eating disorder in, you know, 10 years. Think about the past, but I don't have that trigger because I've overcome that. I don't think it is a permanent addiction. I think we can overcome anything that we want in life if we have the will. And we just choose. We choose to overcome it.
Yeah.
And then you asked another question.
Three ways to program, reprogram.
Reprogram, yeah.
If someone wants to start to change a belief about themselves or how they do things.
Yeah, well, like I was saying before, like therapy was such a huge catalyst. And being able to speak about it and just have an ear, have someone there that, just a way to, for you to release it. Because when we hold it in, that just, it just keeps perpetuating it. Mm-hmm. So finding a means to release it, whether, I mean, there's so many ways to do that. There's so many courses that you can do, so many online things, writing it out, you know, that was huge. But like I said, with reprogramming, it's first step is awareness. And the second step, like, and I know this, and I emphasize this again, it's so challenging when we're in that moment and that logical thinking part of our brain shuts down and we go into that freeze, flight, or fight mechanism. It's so difficult to be aware in that moment to reach for something else, to reach for the good thing. So finding ways to have reminders of when that comes up. I actually, this is funny, but I have tattoos that are reminders for me.
What do your tattoos say? Oh, it's in the, this, like yeah, the clear
there,
ink.
There's some white ones.
Ooh.
So this one, it's actually, this is my grandmother's name, Lila. Mm. And it actually means knight in Hebrew. For me, there's a couple reasons. One, she's a Holocaust survivor. And it was for me a reminder that she's gone through so much and was such a light that no matter the darkness, there's always going to be light.
Always, if you look for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no light without the darkness and vice versa.
Yeah.
So for me, that was like, that's my favorite one.
So
it's my
beautiful.
Most powerful one. And then this one, it's the tribe symbol, which stands for transform, resurrect yourself, be empowered. So it's just that reminder that in any moment you can transform, resurrect yourself from your circumstances, and then again, be inspired and empowered. Again, finding ways, like I was saying, like rather than not only just don't buy the cookies or whatever it may be that you know is unhealthy and that isn't going to support you. And this is just like a generalized statement, of course. Put something else in front of it or put a note there that reminds you of self-love or reminds you of something else. Because when you're unable to sort of think, having that visual really helps to snap you out of it. And that's why for me, the tattoos, it was like that visual reminder.
Yeah, oh, I got mine. Love.
Yeah, it's that visual reminder that it's right there and you're like, oh, okay. Because when you see it, you believe it, right? So that for me was having those visual cues and those visual reminders and finding different things that rather than reaching for those, the negative thing, find a song that makes you inspired. Find, you know, find an object. I carry stones with me everywhere. So reminding me of that, having that on me, is a reminder to stay grounded. It's, that physical presence or that auditory, it's all about like senses. So shifting the sense from your internal feeling, because a lot of it comes from the gut when you have those anxiety driven responses, to shifting to a different sense. And that helps to get you out
so
of that.
So beautiful. Yeah.
So is there some things that helped me?
I love those, Jade, and I love you,
I love you
and your wisdom. Every time I talk to this woman, you just have such a well of wisdom, and I observe you when we're in spaces together, and you love with all your heart. Mm-hmm. You give with every ounce of your being, and I'm so grateful that I'm your friend and on this journey and to know you and for everybody who's listening and watching to be able to learn from your experience and just thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So before we close this out, I got three questions for you.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is what I ask all my guests. And this is the Unlock Your Heart round.
Ooh.
Right?
Ooh.
We're going to learn a little bit more about you, Mama.
Okay.
What's something about you that not a lot of people know?
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Something unique about you.
The first thing that came to my mind is a weird one, and I don't know if you want to see this. I have a really big tongue.
Show it.
It's really weird. This is really
everybody who's listening on iTunes has to go to YouTube now to check out her episode to see Jade's tongue.
It's inappropriate. I apologize in advance. Oh God, I don't know why I'm doing this. And then I'll tell you like, an actual like internal thing that's okay. Oh God, why am I now embarrassed? All right.
Wow.
I have like a cow tongue. It's weird. It like covers it's the entire thick. Circumference of my
it's
mouth.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's huge. It's weird.
Am I big?
Something people don't know about me besides that weird
well,
thing.
Well, it helps you sing.
Actually, it's been harder.
Ooh. Oh.
But it does create a fuller sound. But in classical training growing up, they're like, you need to open your mouth differently. I was like, you don't understand. I'm opening my mouth in the way that I can't. It's just my tongue is so big. It was a thing. Anyways, people don't know about me. I mean, I'm typically an open book. I think, I'm very much an open book because I think it...
You're still laughing at my tongue.
Still laughing at my tongue. Gosh, people don't know about me. I mean, I'm a big theater nerd, but people know that. I'm obsessed with gemstones. Most people know that. I have a big obsession. Yeah, I don't know that there's something.
Well, I think the tongue, people, you got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think
I didn't know that.
Good. Yeah, there
and
we go.
And you did show and tell today, yeah. So thank you. You went above and beyond
yeah,
on this one.
Yeah.
Woo. All right.
Ooh.
High five. A+.
Thank you. Now the world will see my enormous tongue.
It's the best.
That's pretty great.
Okay, so when you're in a really dark place,
yeah.
What's your go-to to get out?
I love that. This is fun. I sing and dance, but to myself. And like
lucky
freeform,
you
like thank you
seriously
I,
amazing
aw thanks yeah. Well for me it's like this energetic release for me also specifically like singing and dancing like I remember being like 5, 6, 7 and anytime I was like sad or there was like trauma going on in the household, I would go and I would sing to myself. And I remember like crying and singing, but it was so cathartic.
That's
and
beautiful.
So, and nowadays yeah. Also like I've dance for me, mm-hmm. Just being able to like freely express and just release whatever that is that's going on internally, mm-hmm. That it's so supportive for me.
Yeah.
It's so supportive for me.
Yeah. And I would say this for everyone who's listening or watching, that is one of the most powerful things you can do too,
yeah.
Jade, because
yeah.
Emotion is energy in motion, right?
Yeah.
You can move your body and just like shift it out. Maybe that's yeah. One way to feel it too.
Yeah, yeah.
And just to move the emotion, the energy through your body
yeah.
And to shift your state, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Physiology, like shifting your physio, like, you know, Tony Robbins talks about this all the time.
Use
like
your body.
ETW. Yeah.
It's the fastest way to get
yeah,
you out of
yeah.
An emotion.
Completely. Like shift your physiology, you shift your emotion immediately. And so for me that like,
dance.
I just have been unconsciously doing that forever, and it just is
brilliant.
Oh, stop it. Stop it. I'm just
gonna stop it. Stop it.
Oh, man.
So good.
So good.
We're just going to keep this rolling all day long, okay? Just for you.
Stop it. Stop. But yeah, so for me, that's been a huge, huge gift. And there's also like, gosh, this meditation, I can't think of what it is at the moment, but it's like this physical meditation or like energy work that I've done as well, which goes through each chakra.
Ooh.
So focusing energy on releasing each chakra. And so they call it like static dance or static dance,
yeah.
Or whatever, you know, there's just different forms of that that help just to like shake out the energy. Yeah.
How about this?
Go shimmied.
I know, like energy. I'm going to check back in with you to find out what that is.
Yeah.
And then we'll put a link in the show notes to
yeah, yeah.
Whatever that meditation is. That maybe
yeah,
that
I believe it's, Alita St. James is a dear friend of my family in New York, and she does a lot of energy work, and I think it's one of her meditation pieces.
Perfect.
So
yeah, yeah, we'll link it up.
Yeah.
Final question.
Yes.
Ooh. Oh. Knowing what you know now.
Ah. Oh. Yeah. Oh, God. Oh. That's a good question already.
What advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
You know, it's something that I actually say to my inner child, my 10-year-old self, all the time, which is, I'm here and it's all going to be okay.
Mm.
And I think it's so important to speak to our inner child and to heal that and to communicate with that because... you know, that's where so much of this stems from.
All of it, all of our pain is yeah. Like our little girl inside.
Exactly.
Who just wishes that she was heard or seen
or loved
or loved
yeah.
Or know that I'm enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I always say, I love you, I'm here, and it's all going to be okay. Because, you know, the only thing constant is change. Mm-hmm. So, and just a reminder that, you know, it's all for our own good. Like, everything we experience is for our growth. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that, you know, this too shall pass, this moment will pass, and it's going to strengthen us for the next moment and going to strengthen us for our divine life purpose.
Yeah.
And so just the reminder of that.
Yeah. I love you.
I love you.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Of course.
I might need to have you back on again.
Of course. Anytime.
Oh my God. Okay.
We'll make it work.
Yay!
How awesome is Jade and her tongue? You guys, it's pretty epic. You know, we actually videoed this episode, so if you do want to see it, go check out the video on my YouTube channel. And I just love Jade so much, and I'm really grateful that I was able to catch her to record this episode as she was passing through LA. And she's got a ton of wisdom to share. And so if you want an extra boost of empowerment from Jade, go check out my Instagram at @IamStephanieKwong, where I have a mini video of Jade sharing another go-to practice she uses to get out of the self-doubt that was not on today's show. I put these extra wisdom bombs from all my guests on my Insta for you, so it becomes a place for you to go to for the inspiration and empowerment you may need. If there's someone you know who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you got value from this episode and want more, I would love for you to subscribe to the podcast and leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, because that means we can support even more people to rise higher together. And as Jade shared, self-love was a massive catalyst for her healing. So check out my free self-love gift that I have for you. It's a free self-love kickstart that will give you some powerful practices to get on your journey to owning your worth, rocking your confidence, and opening up to your own love to radically transform your life. And you can download that free gift that I created just for you at stephaniekwong.com/self-love-kickstart. And finally, for everything that we mentioned in today's episode and for the links to connect with Jade, you can check it out in the show notes. And that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP7. You can also check out all my other podcast episodes there too. Until next time, I'm sending you so much love.